G3. The Model of Being and Its Universal Laws. Number 4A.
We started out this morning to discuss the new concept of science and have seen that science has its own dynamics and that therefore the concept of science changes as the ages go on. And in every new age or epoch, we will find a new definition of science. So because science itself is creative and is revolutionary, we can't stem against it. We can't hold it up. We have to go along with it and flow along with it because the idea of science is much bigger than our human sense of it. But this self-creative and self-dynamic idea of science is a good idea. It's an idea of the highest quality because it has been shown by the investigation of the philosophy of science that science has its own logicity. It has its own logic, and that logic is always in an upward trend. It's only here and there that people go off the upward trend, but then come back to it again, so that if one is looking back over the last 400 years, one can see that science has had a constant upward trend, a higher and higher trend. So it is science that is leading really the ages and not the scientists. The scientists are more or less only puppets that are used by the idea of science to bring forth what the idea of science wants to bring forth. The idea of science not only has its own acceleration and its own logicity, but also its own determinism. Namely, it is always goal-directed. It's always directed to an ever higher goal. And this is something we should never forget, that even if something is derailing in the short-term period, it always comes back to the main trend, and that main trend is an upward trend. It is a trend that is goal-directed, and that goal is always a high goal, namely, is always the optimization. Is that the right term, or optimization? It's always the optimization of the idea of science. It's never a downward trend. So the drive of science is to optimize the system so that the systems that we are investigating and the discovery we are making are always showing higher complexities and a better insight into the mechanism of every science. So it is driving to optimal solution. You can see that when you think of what mathematics was 1,000 years or 2,000 years ago and what mathematics is today, one can easily see that mathematics finds optimal solution for problems that earlier ages did not find and could not find an answer. So we should have that attitude, which is important for us, to see that we have to trust the idea of science, that it will lead us forward, that we would have that inward attitude that we say that science will bring forth something that is more wonderful than what we can think out in our best dreams, that it is more wonderful than what we could think out than what our foresight could imagine. So this gives us the necessary expectancy that we have to entertain, and if we have the necessary expectancy, then we are a better transparency also for the idea of science to shine through our consciousness, and we are much more willing and much more ready to accept any forward step. This is also what Thomas Kuhn wrote in his book, you know, Thomas Kuhn with his book, The Structure of Scientific Revolution, with his new term that he brought into general discussion of paradigm shift, showing that the history of science, of philosophy of science, shows that always an age has accepted a scientific paradigm. That means ways and means and methods of how to solve on a secure basis the problems that confront the scientist. These are the accepted ways and means and laws of a scientist. That then always appears an anomaly which cannot be solved within that paradigm. Then something happens. Then there is here and there a scientist who is taking this anomaly as important, does not put it under the carpet or brush it under the carpet, I think you say, but takes it serious and thinks about it until he finds out a new grid, a new lens, a new approach of science which would include this anomaly and which would give an answer to this anomaly. Then this is a paradigm shift to what Kuhn then calls from normal science to extraordinary science, or from ordinary science to extraordinary science. And little by little, when the old scientists die out, then the new generation takes the new paradigm with the extraordinary science as ordinary, as something granted, and builds on that extraordinary science again as being the ordinary paradigm. And so step after step a new anomaly comes up, and again we have a shift, and again we have extraordinary science that replaces ordinary science. And this is the way how he shows in his book how science has developed in the history of science. And now the question always is, which he brings out too, and which other books bring out too, that it is always a question if the ordinary scientist is actually ready for a paradigm shift, to accept it. Because it's very difficult for a scientist who has been trained at the university and has made his PhD and has been working in a field suddenly to find out that he has been working on an insufficient basis, I don't want to say a wrong basis, but on an insufficient basis, and that he has to change his whole attitude towards science. This is hard on many scientists, and therefore not all the ordinary scientists throw up their hat if something new is being seen and said, oh fine, let's change our method. And so there is always a crisis combined with this shift that is taking place. He calls the one scientist who is willing to go from one paradigm to the next paradigm to the next paradigm, he calls him a mature scientist. And this is what we should be. A mature scientist is a scientist who is willing always to question his basis, always to question his knowledge about his subject, meaning that we should always question our knowledge that we have on the Christian Science textbook and the Bible. We should question what we know as being Christian Science, and always ask anew, are we really treading on secure ground, or are there also anomalies that come up? And are we actually willing, really, to investigate our basis anew and perhaps to change our whole attitude towards it? You know, it's quite interesting that one always falls back on Einstein as one who has brought in the greatest paradigm shift that physics has undergone when he brought forth his theory of relativity. But today, the scientists all acknowledge that he was not a mature scientist because he was not willing after 20 years when Heisenberg and Bohr were bringing forth the quantum theory and the quantum mechanics to accept it. And therefore, he was no more creative, really creative, in a paradigm shift way creative afterwards. He could not go on. So let's see that we are not fooled too much by what is going on in this 20th century. Einstein introduced the great paradigm shift, but not the last paradigm shift. There were others that were coming along, like Heisenberg, Bohr, and others, Dirac and so on, who brought in a quite different paradigm shift again. And even today, we know that in the 70s and 80s, quite new concept on the question of matter, on dimensionalism, is breaking in, of which Einstein didn't have the faintest idea. So I say that not to run down Einstein. I hope I didn't do that, but you can read it in various books that was so. His famous word that he said, the Lord doesn't play dice. Der Herrgott würfelt nicht. He put it into German. He could not accept, therefore, the quantum theory, which is taking in the principle of uncertainty. So, let's see that we gain from these experiences and know that we should actually culture a consciousness that is flexible, very flexible, and is willing to be to accept and receive and welcome new concept of science, naturally not any funny concept, but naturally things that can be really stated and proved in a scientific way. So again, you can see what we said right from the beginning. It's always the grid through which we look which is important. Through which grid do we look, do we see reality? And therefore, we have to work on that grid and see that that grid is more and more approaching the criteria of a holistic science. If we know that only like can understand like, then a holistic worldview demands also a holistic attitude, a holistic consciousness, so that the holistic structure of being is the same as the holistic structure of our consciousness. Then like can see like and like can understand like. The change that has come with new science compared with the old science, I want to state quickly again and repeat it, is that in the old science, the scientist was interested in analyzing objects. In the new science, the object is no more so important. It is the structure, the relationships of the whole that is under consideration and under investigation. We should therefore shift our accent from objects to relationships. We should shift, so to say, from things and object to procedures, to processes, and see the mechanism of processes on the relationship. Did I put that clearly in English terms? Yes. Well, if we have seen that, then we can ask ourselves, and I go on now, under capital A, Roman 2, to the further subtitles there. We have taken the holistic definition of science, and now I go and take the other points, elements, categories, law, systems, structure, dimensions, cybernetics evolution. So I'm talking about these points in the same ordered way. If we have the one whole and see that there is only one cosmos, one world, and that that world cannot be fragmented, cannot be split up into little parts, but always remain the whole, then we have to ask ourselves now, what are then the elements that are holistic? What are the holistic elements? Because we know that every subject is a compound of elements and of numberless elements, and so we can ask ourselves in a holistic science, what are the building blocks of a subject or of the object under consideration? We know that natural science has undergone quite a historical change, that natural science first was considering material building blocks as the ultimate building blocks, like matter, molecules, atoms, electrons, and so on, until they found out that even these small particles do not exist as matter, but that they are fields of energy. That matter is as such no substance, has no substance as such, but can be defined today as an energy field. So from the little erratic little blocks, so to say, from the little billiard balls concept of physics, a change has taken place, that they have seen they are not no more things, but they are fields, energy fields. That's how matter is today defined. A field has no limits. So at once we can see that something very important has happened, that from a limited building block, the thought has turned to a field as building blocks, so to say, as fundamental elements on which the whole is built. Well, a field, an energy field, is therefore a metaphysical concept because it is not limited. At the moment you have no limitations, it becomes metaphysical, above matter. Matter is defined through three-dimensional or four-dimensional aspects of space-time. But if you break that up, there is no time and no space, then we break up the concept, all concept of matter as being something, a thing, but have the field concept. From the field concept, the physics have gone to a metaphysical concept because that was the nearest to how they could explain now reality. And from there, they have, as we have seen this morning, they have a feeling that behind these fields is something even deeper, namely a spiritual, transcendental origin. So little by little, in this age, we have seen the transition from blunt, solid, tough matter to fields, to energy, then to field of energy, then to metaphysical concept, to ideas, to spiritual factors. That is what has happened in physics, and we know that also in philosophy there was a first attempt with Leibniz, that he began to ask himself, but what are really the building blocks of the whole cosmos, of the whole reality, not just of the material worldview? And he began to see something, that the building blocks were what he called monads, I don't know the English expression, which was coined by him and which stood really for the concept of idea. I've already touched on that, but said I will talk later about it. He had, when we read his book, he had already seen something. He had seen that reality could be brought back to spiritual root notions, to root notions of reality which were of the nature of ideas, of monads, of ideas. And in addition to that, he began to see that if he could see this reduction of reality to ideas instead of particles or atoms, that then we would just have to find a calculus that would enable us to calculate with these ideas and calculate reality. So he was speaking about this root notion of reality, and that we could then compute with these ideas. He left that whole project because I think it was premature at his time. It needed quite some time until Mrs. Eddy came and began to see that reality can be reduced to ideas, of divine ideas, and that these ideas are can compute with each other, reflect each other, and spoke about the calculus of spiritual ideas, the divine infinite calculus. Leibniz, too, was very near to that point, because in the field of mathematics, he was the one who discovered the infinitesimal calculus, the differential calculus. And so that the idea of calculus was very near to him. And so he was at the door of trying to find a calculus of ideas. But as I said, he left it because time was immature. So today we know that the building blocks of reality, if we look at them as holistic, we can't have any other building blocks or elements except ideas, because ideas alone are holistic, because they have no restrictions, they have no limits. And so ideas are ideas that exist without time and space. They exist in the spiritual realm of the real. So here we have a holistic sense that would be the basis of a holistic science. We come to the next point, the next criterion for a holistic science, and that is categories versus randomness. Now, this is a very important point. This important point is something that will engage our attention more and more as time goes on. The need for categories. Why should we need categories? Why does a science need categories? Why can't we do without it? Well, we can't do without it because we know that the one as a noumenon has infinite phenomena, has numberless phenomena. If we have a field of numberless ideas or elements, we cannot grasp them, because the human mind is not able to grasp infinitude. Therefore, we can only master infinitude by reducing infinitude to a science. And the very first thing is that when one has seen the building blocks of a holistic science as ideas, that the next step is to classify these numberless ideas into categories, so as to simplify the numberless phenomena that with which we have to deal, and simplify to such simplicity that our mind can deal with them, can grasp them, can calculate with them. So every science, no matter what the science is, was always engaged in finding the true categories in their subject, because they knew that this was a simplification, and every simplification would be a help for understanding the subject. So right from the beginning, since the Greeks, there was always an effort to find the categories of being with practically no success, even then in the new, after the Renaissance, in the old age of science, they began to find out, the philosophers were trying to find out the categories and never really came to satisfactory conclusion. This is a very difficult subject. So all what was achieved is that each science for itself tried to find their own classification, like in chemistry, like in physics, like in biology, like in zoology, in botany, and so on. They tried to classify the infinite variety of phenomena into a few categories so that they could distinguish at least categories from categories and make more sense about that infinite variety of phenomena. So these categories were very necessary in order to build a holistic science. But here again, we must see that they still try to find it out. They know that they can find some categories in their own specific field, but the big idea is left open, namely that if the building blocks of reality are ideas, they would have to find categories of ideas. You see, quite reasonably, they would have to find categories of ideas. And up to now, they admit that they couldn't find it.